This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
1 Thessalonians, please. 1 Thessalonians. We are in a Sunday night series. For those who aren't normally with us or new to us, we've been in a series on the pastor. I always need to be preached at, but that's not the point of this series. We want to be talking to our young men about what they might be getting into if God's leading them into ministry. Some of us may be involved in a pulpit committee someday, somewhere. We may move across the country and look for new church. We're considering the process of ordination here at our church. And so lots of reasons to study what the Bible has to say about the office of pastor. We're moving kind of slow, to be honest, but I'm having a good time, and hopefully you're learning something. We kind of picked up some things from the book of Titus, written to a young pastor. Now we're going to take a little different approach, but we really are heading towards, towards the close of this series. I think, though, you'll find application tonight for everybody, not just pastors or would-be pastors or people sitting with pastors. There's ministry application for any of us that minister. Whether you're a minister in your family, ministering to your spouse and children, whether you're ministering in a classroom or in a music studio, whether you're ministering in a church club like Treasure Seekers or Sunday School or Kids Church or whatever, there's all kinds of ministry application, and I hope that you'll see those as we go through this situation. It's going to be the example of Paul, who was a pastor. We think of him as a missionary, but he pastored churches. He was an evangelist. He was a church planner. He was a pastor. He was kind of all these things. And as I was thinking through these points, I couldn't help but think of our missionary that's with us and even applications that would be for her and her ministry. So I think you'll find this very practical. It's going to be more of a Bible study than a sermon, per se. And a funny thing happened. I don't usually strive for this. But the points are alliterated. And they're alliterated, we get this, with the letter G. You don't often get alliteration from G. The letter P is really good to alliterate with. You know, you can talk about how people desire to have prosperity and prestige and power, you know, and pleasure. And you can go on and on with the letter P. But the letter G is what it's going to be. So here's what we're going to do. Once we have our introduction, we're going to read our text. We're doing an exposition in Thessalonians. We're going to read the verse, talk about it, and we're going to see if you can identify the G word that goes to that verse. We could almost pretend it's kids' church and do boys against the girls. You wouldn't be interested in that, would you? I don't know. I think some of you would be. We'll see what happens. We try to have fun, especially for the kids on Sunday night, but at least we say it's for the kids. Sunday night's family time. All right, 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 2. This is a letter from Paul, 1 Thessalonians 1, verse 2, and he says, "We give thanks to God always for you all, making mention of you in our prayers, remembering without ceasing your work of faith and labor of love and patience of hope in our Lord Jesus Christ in the sight of God and our Father." I want to highlight that he said, "We give thanks to God always." We're always thankful for you Thessalonians. And then he said in verse 3, I remember all these things about you. Now, Paul wrote another inspired letter to the Thessalonians, so turn to that one. 2 Thessalonians comes in most copies of the Bible right after 1 Thessalonians. Not necessarily in a chronological Bible, maybe, but 2 Thessalonians, the introduction to this letter, has something similar. 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 3. He says, "We are bound to thank God always for you." Does that sound familiar? Almost word for word. "We are bound to thank God always for you." He's thankful for these Thessalonians, brethren, as it is meet or appropriate, because that your faith groweth exceedingly. That sounds like what he described in verse 3 in the last letter. "Your faith groweth exceedingly, and the charity of every one of you all towards each other aboundeth." He says, you guys love each other a lot, and that makes me thankful. And then he says in verse 4, "So that we ourselves..." Now, this phrase is not quite as straightforward in the syntax. He says, so that we ourselves glory in you in the churches of God for your patience, that's perseverance, and faith in all your persecutions and tribulations that you endure. What does he mean when he says, we glory in you in all the churches? Well, we know that Paul traveled a lot, and he planted churches, and he visited churches. And the sense here is that Paul said, when I go to other churches, I brag about you. I talk about you, and I talk about the way that you love each other and the way you've been faithful and persevering in these tribulations. So in both cases, he says, I'm thankful for you, and I remember you. In the first letter, he just says, I'm always remembering you. In the second letter, he says, I'm telling everybody else about you, which means clearly that he remembers them. So if you want a title for the study this evening, it's A Ministry to Remember with Gratitude. A Ministry to Remember with Gratitude. Paul had a ministry in that city of Thessalonica. It's a bigger city there in Macedonia, up the northern region of what we call Greece now. And he had a ministry there. And when he looked back on it, he was thankful. He remembered them. And I hope that all of us, in the ministry that God has given to us, whether it's to little kids that we babysit, or whether it's to our younger siblings, you know you can have a ministry to them too. Wow, zero amens for that one. Not surprising. Or whether it's your spouse, your classroom, students, what your ministry, don't you want in the future to be able to look back with thanksgiving? Say, I remember that ministry. I'm thankful for that, and I'm thankful for them. I think we can learn some things about how to go about our ministry in a way that will cause us to remember our ministry with gratitude. If we go back to the first inspired letter, but chapter number 2, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, we'll look at over half of the chapter tonight. We're just going to go through it verse by verse, phrase by phrase, and try to understand it. This is one of those sections where it's outside of the book of Acts, but it's kind of historical because Paul is writing in a style that we would call autobiographically. From a literary standpoint, Paul is talking about himself. He's explaining what his ministry was like when he was in the city of Thessalonica. He's kind of reminiscing and remembering what he did when he was there. And as we learn about what Paul did while in Thessalonica, we can perhaps gain some insights into why he remembered them so well and with so much gratitude. All right, so 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse number 1. For yourselves, brethren, know our entrance in unto you, that it was not in vain. It wasn't pointless that we came to your city. But even after that, we had suffered before and were shamefully treated, as you know, at Philippi. Wait, what is that talking about? Philippi, we were shamefully entreated. Does that ring any bells? This is history, isn't it? What does he mean, our entrance to you? And then he says that, you know that before we suffered, we were shamefully entreated at Philippi. What's he talking about? Right? They were arrested without trial. They were beaten, thrown in jail. Remember? The earthquake set them free. The jailer gets saved. That's what he's talking about here. Because if we look in Acts, we've traced the history from Philippi when they left, after they finally got out of jail, they went to Thessalonica. That was their next big stop. And so he says, we came to Thessalonica right after Philippi. It's very possible that the wounds on their back had not yet healed. Think about that. Paul and Silas have come on their second missionary journey, Paul's second missionary journey. He's on this trip. He's shamefully entreated in Philippi. He gets out, he wraps things up, and he moves over to Thessalonica. And how does he respond? Well, he says, middle verse 2, do you see it after the word Philippi? We were bold in our God to speak unto you the gospel of God with much contention. Now, contention there doesn't mean, it's not the connotation of fighting and strife in the sense of an argument. It does have the idea of fighting, but in a different sense. It's from the word agon or agony, and it was originally like the name of a meeting place, like a civic center, where they would have wrestling matches. Not like, you know, fake wrestling matches today, but like Grecian real wrestling. And so the word agon came to mean the striving, the work, the energy put out wrestling. Have you ever noticed that wrestling matches, like, they last just a couple minutes, and the guys are totally worn out? Because they are straining every fiber of their being during that 3 minutes of wrestling. And that's the word picture when Paul says, we came and we were bold in our God to speak the gospel with much straining and striving and effort. We gave it everything we had. Wow. Paul had just come from a case of abuse. And he comes here to Thessalonica after having been persecuted for the cause of Christ. He was bold and spoke the gospel with much contention. Can you think of a G word that kind of summarizes that? Boys or girls, who wants to be the first with a point on the board? I'll give you a hint. It starts with a G. Ha ha. G-R. The word I got was gritty. Paul was gritty. He gritted his teeth and he was not going to quit. You know, when someone has some grit to them, they got some guts. Oh, I could have done that. Guts, but that's probably not a good first point of a sermon, is it? But this is a Bible study, so we could have done guts. Anyways, guts or grit, the point was he had some stick-to-itiveness. He had some, he didn't quit easily. He wasn't discouraged. He said, well, last time we went into the city, we shared the gospel, we got thrown into jail, so I don't think I'm going to do that. And if I do witness, I'm going to be real shy about it. I'll be quiet. I'll kind of take my time. Paul didn't do that. With boldness, they preached the gospel. He had the grit to persevere after hardships. Let's keep reading. Wow, 1 point for me. verse 3. For our exhortation was not of deceit, nor of uncleanness, nor in guile. I think that's what got me thinking about G's, and that is not the answer, okay? We are not supposed to minister with guile. Our exhortation was not of deceit, nor of uncleanness, nor in guile, but as we were allowed of God to be put in trust with the gospel. How many times has he mentioned gospel already? Twice, right? Even so we speak, not as pleasing men, but God, which trieth our hearts. For neither at any time used we flattering words, as ye know, nor a cloak of covetousness. God is witness. Okay, so I'm noticing that he didn't use trickery in verse 3. And in verse 4, he didn't say things just that people wanted to hear because he wanted to say what God wanted him to say. And we see in verse 5 that he didn't tell things to people that would make them treat him well. He was covetous and thought, well, if I flatter them, they'll give me what I want. So how can we sum up those three ideas with the letter G? Paul's ministry was genuine. The boys got a point. Way to go. All right. It's 1-1-0 for the girls. And their name even starts with a G, but that does not get you on the board. All right. So he was genuine in his ministry. And whole sermons and books could be written on this. There is no substitute for genuineness in ministry. If you flatter, if you manipulate to try to get what you want out of people, that's not going to be a ministry that you remember with gratitude. That's not going to produce good fruit. If you're telling them just what they want to hear so that you can be popular, that's not going to be a fruitful long-term ministry. It's not what you want to do. He spoke honestly. He told them the truth. And can I say, I think genuineness is an area where, as a whole, Christians, and I'm going to say specifically, our church can grow. In fact, I have a burden that we grow in that area. I'm not saying that we're dishonest with each other, but I'm saying sometimes we're pretty good at just letting people see what we want them to see. We don't admit that we're human and that we struggle with sin. And if we don't admit that we're human and struggle with sin, how are people going to bear our burdens with us? If we act like everything's fine, then why are people going to pray for us? And furthermore, if we act like we're fine, then when they have a struggle, they think, well, I'm the only one, so I can't admit this. Now, I'm not talking about just a regular, you know, display of dirty laundry. But I'm talking about being real with each other, being genuine. Paul was genuine in his ministry, and so this is kind of a sidelight, but I've been wanting to share it with you, so this is my in, okay? We need to not feel obligated to look perfect all the time. Okay? Because let me just break the news to you. you're not. And we already know that about you. We may know it better than you do. But as I read about Scripture in Acts and in the epistles, how we're told to one another, you know, teaching each other and encouraging each other, if we don't ever admit that we need to grow, how are we going to do that? I may preach on it sometime, but you know that verse is in the Bible. It says, confess your faults one to another and pray for each other. Yeah. So let's take a page out of Paul's playbook and be genuine. He was genuine. I think it's speaking primarily about his preaching ministry, that he didn't manipulate the crowd. And teachers, we got to be careful about that. I'm using teacher in the broadest sense there. I'm talking about parents and grandparents and classroom teachers and music teachers and Sunday school teachers, all teachers, ministers, and that's you. Don't be manipulative. Just because you're the one with the podium doesn't mean you can wheedle people into doing what you want. I'm going to present it in a way that I get the response I'm looking for. Be sincere. Don't flatter. Don't manipulate. Be genuine. Tell the truth. Paul did, and when he remembered his ministry in Thessalonica, he was thankful. All right, let's keep reading. Verse 6. Nor of men sought we glory. There's another G, not the answer. Neither of you, nor yet of others, when we might have been burdensome as the apostles of God. What is he saying here? This is a theme he talks about in a few of his letters. He says, I could have used my authority to sort of demand certain things of you. He talks in some places specifically about finances. I could have said, look, I'm ministering to you spiritual things. It's no big deal if I require carnal things, financial, material, food things from you. So this could be a reference to that. It could be a reference to kind of a power thing where, hey, I'm the apostle, right? So treat me with respect. He says, nor of men sought we glory. And he said, I could have been burdensome to you, but I didn't do that. I think that speaks of his ministry, and I have a G word that describes it. Can you think of one? That's the word I had. The girls are on the board. Gracious, genuine, and gritty. Paul's ministry was gracious. He wasn't like, look, I'm a teacher. Do what I said. Obey me. Why? Because I said so. It's not gracious. Look, I'm the parent here, so you got to do what I say, because I don't want to get out of my easy chair. How is that spiritual? You're supposed to be servant leaders, I'm pretty sure. Paul said, I'm gracious. I was gracious when I was there. I wasn't burdensome to you, and I didn't look for glory. A leader, whether it's a pastor, missionary, Sunday school teacher, whatever, a leader that's like, I want everyone to tell me how good I am, that is not the ministry that Paul had. And I don't think we should go there. All right, verse 7. All right, if you've been struggling and you want to get on the board here, this is your verse. But we were gentle among you, even as a nurse cherisheth her children. Anyone? Okay. I heard the boys first. All right, so it's 2-1-1. I got the first one. Gritty. Paul didn't quit. He was also genuine. He was authentic. He was gracious, he wasn't power hungry, and he was gentle. He goes on to talk about how he was so loving. Look at verse 8. So being affectionately desirous of you, I loved you so much that I was willing to have imparted unto you not the gospel of God only, but also our own souls, because you were dear to us. He said, I love you so much, I would have given you my life. Kind of like the verse we saw in the PowerPoint, the last slide this morning, right? I could wish myself a curse for my kinsmen according to the flesh. He says here, I would have given you my life, Thessalonians. I would have laid down my life for you and given you the gospel. He had a love for them. He had a gentle care for them. Again, we conservatives sometimes don't specialize in being gentle, right? Because we're used to having to fight for the truth all the time, so we're just kind of looking for a fight. We just walk around with our dukes up, right? I'm ready. I'm godly.
right? We're ready to let him have it. What about a gentleness? How does he describe it? What's his metaphor? I was gentle like a
nurse.
Like a nurse with a child or a baby. That's pretty gentle, right? It's been a while since we had any babies in our house, but we were gentle when we held our babies. Gentleness. Does that characterize your ministry? Or are you brusque with people? I told you that once. What's wrong with you? Man, it doesn't sound like gentle. It doesn't sound like a nurse with a baby. Picture those preemies we saw this morning. How would you hold those babies, right? That's how Paul said, I treated you Thessalonians. That was my ministry, was gentle. This is to be characteristic of the minister of the gospel. Whether you're a pastor or not, you should be a minister. And gentleness and a loving heart ought to characterize your ministry. All right, that brings us to verse 9, I think, right? Verse 9. What was the score? 2-1, right? Okay. For ye remember, brethren, our labor and travail. For laboring night and day, because we would not be chargeable unto any of you, we preached unto you the gospel of God. Now, this verse is wonderful, but sometimes when a sentence piles phrase upon phrase, it's easy to lose the core of the sentence, especially if set off by commas, there's kind of a descriptive phrase or an expansive phrase. And sometimes it's good to kind of put it in parentheses for a minute and see what comes before and what's after to really get the thrust and the core of the sentence. So look at it this way. 1 Thessalonians 2:9, after the colon. For laboring night and day, comma, we preached unto you the gospel of God. Okay, so the because phrase tells us why they were laboring night and day. And so that's important, but it's not the main grammar structure of the sentence. The grammar of the sentence is, we labored night and day preaching the gospel unto you. We worked hard. We worked all the time so that we could preach the gospel to you. Do you remember that? We travailed, we labored night and day. What's a G way to describe this in verse 9? Gregarious? Okay. It's not the one I had. Maybe we'll get a quarter point for that. I'll give you a hint. It's a hyphenated word, and part of it is in the verse. Gospel-centered. Who said that? All right. That's close. I mean, it does start with a G. It's not what I had. All right, from the sound booth. Gospel-oriented would work, except that it just doesn't. I had gospel-driven. That was my next answer. All right, so I got 2 points. I mean, that was close. That was kind of a draw. Yeah, all right.
It was gospel-driven. And the reason I used the word driven is because it was what motivated the other things that he did. Yes, it was centered on the gospel. Yes, it was oriented towards the gospel. But it's what pushed him to do what he did. He said, I labored night and day. It was none of this 9-to-5 stuff. I labored night and day so that I could preach the gospel to you and not be chargeable. I didn't want to feel like I owed you one, and I didn't want you to feel like you owed me one. And so I that's why I did this kind of bivocational stuff. Kind of reminds me of something from this morning too, doesn't it? Look at all these tie-ins, right? Being a nurse so that you can do Bible studies. Paul says, I was willing to ply my trade so that I could give the gospel. I was gospel-driven, and that's why I travailed and labored night and day, because I wanted to be able to share the gospel without being a financial imposition on you. So he does have that phrase there, because we would not be chargeable unto any of you. So he's saying, in order to avoid that, I worked all the time so that there would be no question of ulterior motives. There would be no, well, yeah,
but we're paying Paul pretty well, aren't we? And he said, so I just went ahead and worked. And I worked hard and I worked long. But the reason I did that was so that unhindered I could share the gospel. What are you willing to do so that you can share the gospel unhindered? Will you serve a neighbor and do extra chores to help your neighbor so that you'll get some goodwill built up and then be able to share the gospel? Or are you only going to help your neighbor if they pay you? I mean, really, right? Are you willing to do what you do, not for the financial advantage that the world would expect, but for the opportunity merely of being able to share the gospel? It should be characteristic of our ministry as pastors or whatever role God has given us. He was gospel-driven. Hey, maybe we could review the G's together. Let's do them backwards, okay? So we just saw gospel-driven. Say it with me. Gospel-driven. Before that, he was gentle. Before that, he was gracious. Before that, he was genuine. And firstly, he had grit, or he was gritty. Yeah, you're doing great. I didn't even give you like hand motions or anything. Good. Let's come back now, please, to verse number 10. 1 Thessalonians 2:10. Ye are witnesses. Over and over again, he says, you guys know this. You've seen me. You've known me. You're witnesses. He's being very transparent, isn't he? Authentic and genuine. Just a little review there. Verse 10. Ye are witnesses, and God also, how holily and justly and unblameably, three powerful adverbs, we behaved ourselves among you that believed. You saw how we lived, and it was characterized by holiness, justice, and being blameless. Okay, so what's a G word to describe this? Paul was
guiltless.
Oh, that's good. I like that better than mine. That should be like bonus points. And I'm not just saying that because, wow. Godly, sure. And the ladies got nothing. We already got two from the guys. What were you going to say, Mr. Terry? God glorifying. Still nobody has mine. Mine's really simple and boring. Good. I thought you were saying good that it was simple and boring. No, the word is good. Yeah, so, but guiltless, that's great synonym for unblameable, isn't it? Like nobody could say, yeah, Paul, you preached the gospel, but we saw what you did on Friday night. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, Paul, you preached the gospel, but we heard what you said to Silas when you thought nobody was listening. Right? Paul said, I was holy. I was guiltless. I was good. You have to have that integrity if you're going to minister the gospel. You have to. So, back up through our list again. We're going to use guiltless. I'm going to write it in. He lived with a spotless testimony, didn't he? He was unblameable, which is a qualification of a bishop anyways. Guiltless. All right, so he was guiltless, gospel-driven, gentle, gracious, genuine, and gritty. Wow, that was really quiet, or else the rain's getting louder. What do you think? Let's do it again, okay? He was guiltless, gospel-driven, gentle, gracious, genuine, and gritty. Fantastic. Come with me, please, to verse 11. And you know how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father doth his children. I didn't make a point for this. It's interesting. He talks about a nurse with the children. We kind of visualize that as being a woman, I'm assuming. And then here he talks about being a father who comforts and exhorts his children. But let's come on down to verse 12. This is another hyphenated one. 1 Thessalonians 2:12. We charged you as a father. We exhorted you. We comforted you just to make you feel better? Or just to kind of help you have a nice day? No, the end or the purpose of the exhorting and the comforting is found in verse 12. We comforted you and exhorted you and charged you that ye would walk worthy of God, who hath called you unto his kingdom and glory. He says, I exhorted you so that you'd walk worthy. I comforted you that you would live appropriately. You see, Paul wasn't content just to kind of give them, you know, theology proctor, and here's a doctrinal statement, you know, signed here if you agree with it. Paul says, I was exhorting you as a father. I was charging you. I was urging you as a father. I was calling out to you as a father so that you would walk worthy. This is a tough one, but it is hyphenated. It starts with a G. What do you think? I heard somebody. glorify God. Well, he wanted them to, yes. That's a good effort. Guidance. He did give them guidance. Yeah, he was a guide to them. That's very good. But I don't want to give the girls any points. Goading. Wow. Yeah, no hyphen. Wow, it seems like we need to get the Scrabble dictionary out here. Here's what I had. I had growth-oriented. Paul was growth-oriented. He wasn't oriented just on here, let me preach a pretty message. He was like, let me exhort you so that you'll walk worthy. And for all of us that teach, whether it's a pastor that gets ordained, a missionary that goes overseas, a kids' church worker, or a grandparent, if we're teaching, we ought to be teaching for growth. If you all come to church week after week after week and you never get more like Christ, I'm doing something wrong. That's kind of scary, right? I mean, well, you know, I'm a Christian parent. Now I'm doing everything I should be doing for my kids. And they're not growing? What's going on? You need to try something different? Paul was growth-oriented. He said, I'm exhorting you as a father. I'm charging you as a father. I'm comforting you as a father. I have this well-rounded ministry, exhorting, comforting, charging. See how he came at it from different directions? I did all of that as a loving father so that you would walk worthy, not so that you'd think theologically. Do you see that? Now, I'm all for good doctrine. Believe me, that's important. But if good doctrine doesn't lead to sound living, aren't we missing something? Are you exhorting your students, your children, your treasure seekers to walk worthy? Paul was growth-oriented in his ministry. And I don't mean growth in like more numbers. I mean he wanted people to walk a certain way. Is that your focus? Is that your orientation? He wanted them to live right. Well, we're going to wrap up with this tonight. You've done exceptionally well. There were so many close calls here at the end. I don't know what the score actually is. I'm sorry. But you did well. And look, for a prize, you can go to Culver's and see if somebody wants to treat you. Pastor Peter gives out $100 gift cards. I give out nothing. No prizes. I don't even have candy bars for you. All right. Let's go through our review from growth-oriented to the top, and then we'll have a point of history that I think helps to make this even more poignant. So the last one was growth-oriented. Say it with me. Growth-oriented, guiltless, gospel-driven, gentle, gracious, genuine, and gritty. Are those things characteristic of your life and ministry? Paul had a ministry in Thessalonica that he could look back on and remember and be very grateful about. And you know what's so really special and significant about this? Please turn to Acts chapter 17. This is where we find the historical record of Paul's ministry in Thessalonica. He leaves Philippi, and he goes through Amphipolis and Apollonia, I think, a couple of towns that apparently weren't as big, and he was focusing on population centers, and so he went past those to Thessalonica, and then after that he would go to Berea. But what happened in Thessalonica? Let's start at Acts 17, verse 1. Now when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where was a synagogue of the Jews. This isn't Israel, okay? This is over in Macedonia, northern Greece. And there was a synagogue for Jews. It was a big enough city that there were enough Jews there that they had a synagogue. And so Paul, as his manner was, went in unto them and three Sabbath days reasoned with them out of the Scriptures, opening and alleging that Christ must needs have suffered and risen again from the gospel, and that this Jesus whom I preach unto you is Christ. He preached to these Jews and said, first of all, we needed a suffering Messiah. You've misunderstood the prophecies of the Old Testament. Alexander McLaren kind of pointed that out. And in fact, Jesus was that Messiah, and he was risen from the dead, and you need to believe on him. That's what he preached. But if you skim through the rest of the chapter, what happens? We hear that he's there preaching for 3 weeks, and then what happens? He gets run out of town. Maybe he was there 4 weeks, you know. So there's one Sabbath, second Sabbath, third Sabbath, but before the fourth Sabbath, he gets run out of town. So maximum a month, he's in this town. And it's over. I think he planned on staying longer. Most cities he went to, he stayed. Ephesus was what, 3.5 years or something like that?
And here, 3.5 weeks. Now, does that put a little perspective when he says, I labored and travailed day and night? Paul
ministered with some urgency.
Yeah.
And when he was gone, 3.5 weeks later, he could say, I remember you all, and I'm thankful for you. And I shared the gospel with you, and I gave you everything I could in the time that I had. The fact is, none of us knows how long we have with the people God has given us to influence. I was reminded again this week of the imminence of death. Kind of a relative by marriage out in Colorado, probably in his 50s, maybe early 60s. Went to work one day, had a seizure and died. That was it. Nobody was expecting it. And I got the call Friday. His ministry was finished. When's my turn? How long do I have to teach you? How long do you have to teach your students, your children, your grandchildren? We have a limited amount of time. We do know that. We just don't know how long it is. How long will this country be open for gospel ministry? How long will we have freedom in these United States? Let's make hay while the sun shines, as they say. Let's get about it. Let's get busy. Let's do all these G words and be involved in ministry because we may only have 3 weeks. And Paul could look back. I don't think he had regrets. I mean, I think he wanted to stay longer, but because he did what he could do. Let's labor that way. Let's minister that way. So that when our 3 weeks is up, we can look back and be thankful and not wring our hands with regret. Oh, if only. Oh, I should have. Oh, I wish I could have. Let's be faithful ministers. Would you stand, please? Lord, I pray that if nothing else, through this Bible study, you will give us a vision of what ministry can and should be. And that if even a couple of these G words stick with us, it will make an impact on how we minister. It will be faithful. And that whenever you move us like to a different ministry within the church, to a different church or to a different country, or whenever you take someone from us, that we'll just be thankful and look back with fond memories. Oh, Lord. Help us not to miss it. Help us to do what we can while we can. You're worth it. And we love you. Pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Isn't that just like the Lord? So very much like Jesus.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.